This is MSO News Sports. I'm Bill Newell, and we're joined by Essex County Sheriff Kevin Coppinger in his first full year, completed a year and it'll say about a month here in office here at the in Middleton. And Sheriff, welcome, first of all.
Well, thank you, Bill. It's a pleasure to have you back.
Yeah, great to be back again. And so here we are a year into new leadership at the Essex County, at the Correctional Center here. And I guess as Sheriff, what are some of the changes or some of the updates that you can share with us that you've kind of implemented, or you have implemented in the first year?
Well, there was a lot of things that we did when we first came in. I'd like to briefly mention some audits that we did. First and foremost, I contacted State Auditor Suzanne Bump, and she sent her team in here last year to do what we call a transition audit, which was effective of December 31st, 2016. Her staff was here for 7 months, so they looked at the financial piece of it and that operational side of things very extensively. I don't have their report back yet, so I wish I did, but I am anticipating it. I know a couple of things in there that we need to make some improvements on, and we're doing that now. So that's one. We had a correctional audit done from the operation, from the correctional piece of it, done by a company called Creative Corrections. Those folks are a nationally recognized agency. They came in. They looked at this place from A to Z from the correctional point. And we've had several of those recommendations we've implemented, and I'll get to those in a few minutes. And then, of course, we had the audit from the 911 emergency communication system that's most recently been in the paper, and we can talk about that a little bit more. So, to answer your question more directly, it's been a year. It's been 13 months. We've been very, very busy. One of the things we're really, really trying to focus on today is increasing safety within the institution, as well as working with our inmates to better prepare them to return to their communities. In terms of safety, the biggest problem we want to make sure here is that everybody is safe in our institution, not only the inmates, but our staff and our correctional officers. Starting with intake, where when the inmates come when they get checked in here, we've put new security procedures over there. We've purchased some new safety equipment. By chance, we bought this thing called a boss chair. It scans for any illegal substances that might be being smuggled in. And on day two, we actually found an inmate trying to smuggle some Suboxone into the institution. We've been working with some of the local law enforcement agencies and the courts. Last year, we intercepted roughly about $60,000 worth of Suboxone being smuggled in here through paperwork that was described as legal paperwork for an inmate's legal defense. We were able to search it under the law because it's a real fine line we have to draw when we look at inmates' legal things. We really can't, but we were within the law, and we actually had some folks indicted with the assistance of District Attorney Jonathan Blodgett. But this problem with there's a big smuggling problem within the agency, and this is not just unique to Essex County. This is a national problem, particularly with the opiate epidemic. So our goal is to tighten up security. We don't want drugs coming in here. Yes, they do come in, so we're trying to combat that every time. But one of the positive things we've done here is, under my administration, is we trained all our staff with Narcan, how to administer it, and we have Narcan throughout the agency, including all our vehicles, because obviously our cruisers and our vans are on the road every day going back and forth to the courts and to local police departments. So we've trained everybody in there, so if we do have an incident where there's an overdose, that we're going to be able to react and respond appropriately.
Yeah, that's an extensive overview, a lot of moving parts here for sure, as you noted. We can touch on some of those in more detail in just a moment, so let me just advance to the 911 Center, which is a building here, and as you mentioned, it has been in the news. And people may be a little unsure of what the story is around the 911 center, which again was as I understand it, a regional center to take 911 calls and then, send out the appropriate responses from emergency responders. Now, what do I have right? What do I have wrong? And where are we with the 911 center?
The 911 center was a massive project started about 5 years ago. The facility had a construction cost of about $13 million. Originally, it was supposed to represent, I believe it was 19 communities, at least expressed interest at the time. And when it actually went online, roughly 2013, 2014, there were six communities that were going. Beverly backed out at one point before they actually started, and that resulted in some legal action, civil litigation. We did settle that during my tenure last year with Mayor Cahill. Yeah. And so now we have five communities. Amesbury is one of them. Amesbury has expressed a willingness to leave upon the end of their term. They have to give us 2 years' notice. So June 30th of 2019 is when they would be leaving. So at least four communities, Middleton, Essex, Wenham, and why am I doing this? Topsfield. Yeah. I'm sorry. Sorry, Topsfield. Didn't mean to smug you guys. And so when I came in here, I knew there were problems. When I was a police chief, I had a governor's appointment to the state 911 commission, so I have a little bit of experience from running or listening to how 911 centers are operated. So we decided to do an audit, and we contracted with a firm who came in and did a comprehensive audit. And as you just mentioned, that audit is now public, and it's been distributed throughout the all the agencies. In a nutshell, to keep it short, yes, the 911 center has problems. People have known that for a long time. It's taken a lot of criticism in the newspaper. I think it needs to be broken down, and I do think it can be rebuilt. There were a lot of promises made when these groups, I'm sorry, these municipalities entered. A lot of those came with huge price tags. There were a lot of logistical issues. For example, right now we represent five police departments, five fire departments. They all have their individual radio frequencies. So that's 10 radio frequencies our dispatchers have to monitor at any given time. Add to that, there's six additional mutual aid frequencies for both police and fire. So there's 16 radio frequencies. And on sometime most shifts, we probably average about five dispatchers, five call takers down there. That's an awful lot. And then each community is still doing the things they were doing day one. So you can't run a regional center without some uniformity. And a lot of the recs that elsewhere in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts have that uniformity. For example, if we got some of the police departments or some of the fire departments to share one frequency, it's more efficient. It's safer for everybody. They're all on one channel. It makes operations easier. Mistakes don't get made. There's stuff there that we do. There's services that we provide to some of the communities that maybe we shouldn't be doing. They're luxury items that come with a big cost ticket. We've talked to the town managers and the administrators. I'm very happy to say that all four of the ones that will be staying after Amesbury leaves have all, you know, voted in favor of continuing operation. They're happy. They're getting a good product, but they know we have to make changes. Yeah. One of the things I want to throw out right now to everybody is I'm going to give you a quick change of what's happening here. In fiscal year 2016, the Sheriff's Department, you know, had to supplement the budget of the 911 center to the tune of $2.3 million. FY17, that was dropped to $1.7 million. And I'm happy to say now, the budget that we just proposed to the advisory boards for FY19, which starts July 1 of this year, the Sheriff's Department's only going to contribute $430,000. We've already looked at this. We've tightened the belt. We've taken some luxury items out there. We've dropped the Sheriff's Department considerably, almost, 2.3 2 years ago to $430,000 now. And we did this without reducing any reduction in services to the communities. We took out, let's just say, some of the fat, as people call it. Yeah. We're making it more efficient. We have a lot more ideas that we're going to do with that because of that audit.
Right. Well, you found some fat, it sounds like to me. Great. As we move on, let's talk about the opioid issue. I know it's an issue that you've been front and center on for a number of years now. And I know you were a participant in a forum in Boston last week, I guess sponsored by the Washington Post. But beyond that, you're hands-on every day dealing with this issue here with the Essex County Sheriff's Department. And I guess what's your update and what's happened this year with that regard?
Well, it's in addition to the smuggling we talked about and the Narcan, which we have in there, we still have our detox centers, both for the men and the women, 28-day programs, 42 beds for each one, each sex, 42 bed for the men, 42 bed for the women. So that's continuing. What we've done under my administration, we're taking it to the next level. First and foremost, we've partnered up with PARI, which is the Police Assisted Addiction Recovery Initiative out of Gloucester. And in AmeriCorps, we got a grant. So now we have two recovery coaches. So these recovery coaches are working with our detox participants when they leave our facility. They're out on the street. So keep in mind, when an inmate leaves our facility, they're about 120% more a greater chance of overdosing when they leave here. If they were using, let's just say, heroin or fentanyl, and they're here for a period of time, they can't do the same dosage levels when they leave. They will die. They will overdose. Obviously, we want them to stop, but it's such a tough disease. So, you know, now we have the recovery coaches out there. So they're there to help the inmates. So we're going to call them clients once they leave here. So if they're having a bad day, they got somebody they can call to hopefully get them into another program, at least go talk to them so they don't put a needle back in their arm and overdose. So that's huge. We're also just recently, last month, I'm very proud to say we really revamped our reentry efforts. Now, to a quick sheriff's 101 is most people do that, and this is for all our inmates, not just the detox folks. You start here in Middleton with the main part of the jail. You serve most of your sentence. You step down to the Lawrence Pre-Release Center, and then from there you get released back to the communities. Average stay for an inmate's here only 9 months. The people are going back to the communities they came from, and that's all 34 cities and towns in Essex County. So we're pushing to reaching out to anybody in every agency we can locally. How can you help us? These folks are coming back to your communities. We want them to succeed. We don't want to see them back here in Middleton unless they want to come for a visit. We don't want them to come back and stay. So, like, for example, we're doing a big push with the work release programs. We're reaching out to different businesses. Let's get some jobs. Why they're in our custody? We have work release jobs. They work out of the farm. We'll load up the vans in the morning, or actually even on the evening shift. We'll drive them to work. They work. They get paid. The money stays on account here, so they get it when they get released. And then they come back within our jurisdiction. For the businesses, and if there's business out there interested, please give us a call. They get a tax break. So there's an incentive for the businesses. But they also get a group of workers who can do the job. Between that and reaching out to healthcare organizations, faith-based organizations, anybody who's going to help us to give the inmates, what we want to do is give them a toolbox with assets where they can reach out into the community for help so they don't come back here and get rearrested. They don't get rearrested and come back here to do another sentence.
Yeah. That's the opioid issue. There's also the whole mental health piece here, too, which is an aside or connected, I suppose, very likely connected, interacting with the opioid issue. Tell us about mental health and what moves you've made on that front or the facility is doing.
There's a lot of talk today at the State House. There's a lot of criminal justice reform initiatives out there. One of them does center around mental health. Now, and these are very rough numbers, but we approximate about 75% of our population here has a substance abuse problem. About 45% have a mental illness problem, and a lot of the 75% have both. So it's a big problem here. And obviously, we want to make sure we're treating our inmates fairly and obviously humanely. So if they're acting out, if they become violent, is that just because they want to hurt somebody, or is it a mental illness? What are we looking at? We're always worried about, you know, inmates that may want to try to hurt themselves here. So what we've done here, last year we sent 9 of our officers of different ranks to working with cooperation of the Massachusetts Department of Corrections. We sent them to a training program, Mental Health First Aid, it's called. So effective with our academy class that just graduated here in December of last year, that's the first academy class that had a full 8 hours class of Mental Health First Aid. In addition to that, we've done 4-hour classes on working with folks with developmental disabilities, and just suicide awareness. So we're training our staff now to look at maybe we can find out what the root of the problem is instead of just assuming that they're just being violent for the sake of being violent. And just on top of that is we have full-time healthcare workers here. We contract out with a major company that provides not only the healthcare but also mental health. So our correctional staff now knows if they see somebody in one of the housing units they believe is in a mental health distress, they will call the professionals over from the infirmary, and they'll come over and obviously talk to the individuals to see if we can get them the right care at the right time.
Yeah. Again, I go back to what I said earlier, all these moving parts. A lot of folks may not realize all these things are going on. That's for sure. You mentioned smuggling into the facility. Do you want to mention more about that and what's happened here regarding smuggling?
Yes, it's a major problem. As I said before, it's not just here. It's everywhere. But because of this opiate epidemic where it's exploded, and particularly in our area of the country, illicit drugs inside are big money. And believe it or not, there's a very intricate system of a bartering system here. I mean, every time we take a step, a lot of times the inmates will take 2 steps ahead of us to try to get it. For example, somebody might be getting released today. and they're getting out of here. Other individuals inside this agency will say, you know, hey, you got to go out tonight. You got to, quote unquote, load up and get rearrested tomorrow and come back in here with drugs. And they are very, very good at secreting drugs within their bodies. Let's just put it that way. Let the folks use their imagination. But they're very, very good at it. So that's why we've improved our security levels at the intake so they don't bring it in here. But like one strip of Suboxone, which is one of the medications used to treat folks that are on substance abuse treatment, one strip of Suboxone inside the jail is worth $200. That's a lot of money. And again, they'll do that, you know, between themselves inside the jail using the canteen, which is where the funds are, that they can buy stuff through the commissary. But we don't need it inside. We had an overdose here last November. We were an inmate overdosed, and we provided Narcan to him. But one of our correctional officers was actually – he had ill effects from being exposed to this, and he ended up getting sent to Beverly Hospital where he was treated for a suspected overdose just because that was where he was exposed. So we've actually gone above and beyond. We've now gone out and we've purchased a number of protective suits. So if we have an exposure, we have a suspected substance within one of our cells that we think could be fentanyl or something like that, we have the proper protective equipment for our employees if they have to go in and clean it up and take care of it or process the evidence that way. We can't be safe enough here. But again, it's our priority today. I know I wanted to say, if I could back up a little bit. 3 weeks ago, we did a shakedown of the institution, which a shakedown is we pretty much shut down the jail for – we did it for 4.5 days. We searched the place from top to bottom. Every cell was searched. Every individual was searched. Every nook and cranny here was searched. We did it for a number of reasons. First of all, cleanliness, because there's some stuff – this hadn't been done in about 4 years, and also security. We got a little clever because we did it the week before Super Bowl. And my mantra is what we ask our staff to do is let's just be upfront with the inmates. Let's tell them why we're doing this. So we explained to them what we're doing, what our goal was, and if we had their cooperation, we'd let them watch the Super Bowl on Sunday. This is a major, major, operation to do this. So I can honestly tell you we did it. It was very successful. We had very, very, really no problems with any inmates at all. We come up with a number of weapons. They call them shanks, homemade, like knives. I think we had 6 or 7 of them. I will tell you one thing. It was funny. When they walked in some of the housing units, you could hear the toilets flushing. So they were flushing any drugs they might have had here. But we also found, civilian clothing in here, which is a little unusual because why you have that? It wasn't much. It was just a few pieces, but that shouldn't be in here at all because our folks wear jumpsuits that we provide to them. But at the end of the day, what I found very ironic was a couple of inmates approached our correctional officers and said, thank you. And you wouldn't think they'd say that, but they're worried about their safety too because we have a variety of individuals in here. We have murder suspects all the way down to gangbangers, and we have folks in here just on simple OUIs. But there are folks in here that were concerned for their own safety, so they were glad we did that to get the weapons out.
Yeah. In a way, that doesn't surprise me at all, and I'm sure with you too, and at a certain different level. Which brings me now to a totally different issue. As a police chief in Lynn, I know you were very instrumental in working to develop safety measures for schools, for the public, and interacting with the school system in Lynn. And yet now it's in the news yet again, very, very prominently. And I just wanted to get some of your take on this issue. And this case here, the most recent one in Florida, seems to be really centering around mental health issues and about kind of police protocols, if you will, whether it be the FBI or that sheriff's department down there. So many red flags, but yet, this young man still ends up with a gun and so on. What is your take on all the things you've been hearing about this one particular issue?
We can talk for about an hour on this one, but first and foremost, I think we just need to every community should be working closely with their school department and their police department to provide proper procedures. God forbid they ever have a shooting. They should train together. They should sit. First of all, they should sit down and talk about it, come up with a plan, make sure everybody's on the same page, and train. School resource officers are probably one of the best things I've ever seen during my law enforcement career. Put the officers in the schools and let them become an asset to the schools. Let them become known to the students and then become friendly with the students so they can take care of a lot of these things. It's training, but you have to have it across the board. You can't be, we'll do it over this school, but not over this school. There's so much there. Mental health, we talked about that. And yeah, there's a lot of individuals out there today. I am no expert. So let me just say that up front. I've heard the term used before, the Ritalin generation. There's a lot of kids that are on different levels of medications for whatever it might be. We have to make sure that that's maintained. So we need to train our school folks on recognizing mental illness too. I will say, even in my old career, you know, there's so much out there, and there's so many, you know, calls about individuals with suspected, this guy might do this, this guy, this girl might do that. You don't know. I mean, I'm not the FBI. I can't talk for them. But obviously, whatever we can follow up to as far as tips beforehand, that's great. I am an advocate for the gun laws. I know when folks have a, you know, right to bear firearms, and I'm okay with that. I just think, like here in Massachusetts, I think we have some very good gun laws. You know, this you can't get a license to carry unless you follow you know, good background checks and you qualify. They're maintained. They follow very closely. We have to do that. I know other parts of the country, you can walk into a Walmart tomorrow and purchase a firearm. So I think that's a big piece of it. We have to get really make sure we're doing proper background checks and keeping the guns out. But it's a sign of the times, and it's almost to the point where the more these things happen, the more they're publicized, we're going to have more of them too, because it gives individuals their 15 minutes of fame. And that's what scares the heck out of me. It's like once we have one, we're going to have another one. It's tough to stop.
Yeah. And even in the wake of that Valentine's Day shooting, there was a ripple of, like just what you're saying, at different spots of you know, stories or possible stories of all of this happening. So you're absolutely right about that piece. We're talking with Sheriff Kevin Coppinger from Essex County. And Sheriff, anything else that you want to mention that go back on and elaborate on? Anything else, some subjects that we touched on?
No, I think we covered it pretty much. The only other thing I know, last time we talked, I had a lot of budget issues. I still have budget issues, but they're getting better. We are working. I really want to thank our state delegation around the county and the folks at the State House. They've been very open to me, and we've been in there really talking and trying to put our agenda forward and getting the cooperation. So I'm happy with where we are to date. We still got a lot of work to do, but I just want to kind of just summarize it. We're here to serve the county. And whatever we can do, we didn't talk much about some of our community service workers that will be rolling out here as soon as spring breaks a little bit more. We're here to help the county, the communities. If they need something, they should call. We love working with the elected officials in all 34 of our cities and towns. So use us as a resource. Yeah. I may have to say no sometimes, but if we can help you, we're here to serve.
Sounds good. All right, Sheriff, good talking with you, and good luck in year two.
Thank you very much, Bill. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Sheriff Kevin Coppinger with us, Essex County Sheriff Kevin Coppinger. I'm Bill Newell here on MSO News Sports.